This is Sam Sebrin from Athens, and you are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Brooklyn Vegan runs down the lineup for the 2023 edition of 24-Hour Drone, set for May 27th through 28th at Basilica Hudson in Hudson. The annual event has been on hold in person since 2019 because of the COVID-19 pandemic. This year, the show is back in person with Yuka C. Honda of Saibo Mato, Wolf Eyes, Liturgy, Sarah Hines, Laura Ortman, and others performing at the event, which each year is webcast at WGXC.org and broadcast on 90.7 FM. The Basilica Hudson website has all the details about the 24-hour drone show May 27th and 28th at Basilica Hudson and will air on WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jeff Economy of Kingston, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe in Acra with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, May 11th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Raymond Pignone in Columbia Green Media reports that the four defendants accused of severely beating a Kinderhook mechanic at a 4th of July weekend house party in 2020 won't face any criminal charges as State Supreme Court Judge Thomas Marcel dismissed the case against them on May 10th. Marcel said, quote, "I'm going to grant the motions to dismiss this case in the interest of justice. Further, I'm going to deny the motion of the appointment of a special prosecutor as being moot in light of that decision. That's the court's decision. Thank you very much. The parties are excused," unquote. Alex Rosenstrakt, his wife Kelly Rosenstrakt, and two friends, Corey Gaylord and Brian Hogg, were accused of assaulting party guest Harold Handy III at the Rosenstrakt's home in the early morning hours of July 5, 2020. Kelly Rosenstrakt is a Columbia County Sheriff's deputy. Columbia County Judge Richard Kowiek recused himself from the case, and Marcel was appointed as presiding judge. Originally, Alex Rosenstrakt was charged with two counts of third-degree assault, Class A misdemeanors, first-degree unlawful imprisonment, a Class E felony, third-degree coercion, and second-degree reckless endangerment, both Class A misdemeanors. Kelly Rosenstrakt was charged with third-degree coercion, a Class A misdemeanor, and first-degree unlawful imprisonment, a Class E felony. Brian Hogg was charged with three counts of third-degree assault, Class A misdemeanors, and first-degree unlawful imprisonment, a Class E felony. Corey Gaylord was charged with two counts of third-degree assault, Class A misdemeanors, first-degree unlawful imprisonment, a Class E felony, third-degree coercion, a Class A misdemeanor, and second-degree reckless endangerment, a Class A misdemeanor. Handy was beaten so severely at the party that he was eventually taken to the intensive care unit at Albany Medical Center. Handy had two bones in his face fractured and a large hematoma over his left eye. Attorney Mark Porton, who represented Alex Rosenstrakt, Handy attorney Paul M. Freeman of Hudson, and the Columbia County District Attorney's Office did not immediately return calls for comment on May 10th. William D. Roberts, an Albany attorney who represented Kelly Rosenstrakt, said, quote, "Mrs. Rosenstrakt is pleased with the dismissal. She was anxiously awaiting her day in court, knowing that a trial would have vindicated her. She is glad the case is over and she can get back to her life with her family," unquote. Paul D. Herhausen, who represented Hogg, said his client is pleased with the dismissal and grateful for the support he received from the public, quote, "through 3 long years, unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that with few sites for temporary housing for local homeless, Greene County lawmakers are considering a county shelter. Currently, the Department of Social Services places homeless citizens in hotel rooms. But Greene County Department of Social Services Commissioner Kira Pessel told county legislators at a committee meeting on May 8th that, quote, our issue is there is no place to put them. There is nothing left in the county for us to use, unquote. This week, there are 36 homeless individuals at 8 different hotels. Pessel said, quote, we are into Schoharie and Albany counties right now, unquote, which takes DSS staff 3 hours round trip to get them set up in a room. Quote, it's just incredible the resources this is using, unquote. Previously, legislators considered building a homeless shelter next to the new jail on State Route 9W in Coxsackie that would be operated by Catholic Charities of Albany, but the county has lost that location. Read more about the story in Porcupine Soup. And Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that on May 10th, the state Senate passed a bill that would expand a ban on in New York on the sale of exotic animals. Sloths, kangaroos, hyenas, elephants, wallabies, and armadillos would be affected if the measure passed the Assembly and is signed by the governor. Lawmakers are also considering other animal legislation, including a ban on devocalizing cats and dogs, and another bill requiring landlords and lessors to review property for any abandoned animals within 3 days of the property being vacated. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, May 11th. Local early morning temperatures range from 36 degrees in Steventown to 54 in Medusa. The clear skies continue today and it will be mostly comfortable after a cool morning with a high of 79 happening at 4 p.m. Overnight, temperatures drop to 53 degrees. Tomorrow gets a warm afternoon with a high of 84. Overnight, 58 degrees takes us into a windy but so far dry-looking Saturday. Technically, at its lowest levels, the potential for thunder looms. But right now, cool on both days, clothes-wise, but that's due to the wind. Rain seems to be dialed back, so get those sprinklers set up. Today's tide schedule is low at 2:03 a.m., high at 8:04 a.m., low again at 3:08 p.m., and high again at 8:55 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 58 degrees, and the tide strength will be average. And it looks like those conditions will persist through the weekend. Sunset today will be at 6:49 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 4:35 a.m. Looking way up, we see G3 class storm watches up, which means we're monitoring the KP index a little more closely. Remember, 7 is the magic number, and the higher, the better for Aurora reaching our neck of the woods. X-class flare chances are coming in at 20%, so the wind speed is currently 516 kilometers per second at a thin 1.3 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor for all bands till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour collected KP index is 5, storm level. The current sunspot number is 154. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
This is WA3QIZ. Do you read me?
Seymour, isn't it about time you made a real friend?
Mother, please, I'm communicating with my fellow hams.
How do I talk? Push this button here. You're all losers!
Yeah. We want to let you know about how you can assist us in transmission. If you have an idea for a radio segment on the air at WGXC or a radio show, you can turn out to meetings in Kinderhook and Catskill this week. Thursday will be at the Kinderhook Memorial Library at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 10 a.m. at the Catskill Public Library. We'll also have a Zoom meeting about the whole thing on May 30th. That's Tuesday. For you to find out more information about how you can assist us in transmission, how you can do your own segment on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. You've got an idea for doing restaurant reviews, movie reviews. You want to talk to local farmers, talk to local seniors, do a little interview segment. We're going to put you in the most popular hours on the air at WGXC before and after Democracy Now! In the morning and from 4 to 7 in the evening. These are called drive time hours. It's when people are getting in and out of their cars and listening. Listenership is the highest. So we want to put you in high-profile positions to... Go to the WGXC community calendar online for more details about these events. Thursday at the Kinderhook Memorial Library, Saturday at the Catskill Library, and Tuesday, May 30th on Zoom. Next, we're going to hear a story from last Thursday, the on-the-fly Stories Told Live show, Thursday, May 4th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, had the homecoming theme. And according to Catskill's Dina Palin's Facebook page, she got first place for this story on the homecoming theme. Here is Dina Palin with her on-the-fly story slam story from Thursday, May 4th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill.
When I was in seventh grade, I started smoking weed. My brother made me wait till I was 12. And then in eighth grade, I thought, you know, I got to pay for this habit, so I found this rainbow rolling papers, and I made rainbow joints, and I was selling rainbow joints. So we don't talk about it. So that happened when I was a kid, and, you know, it helped pay for the habit in junior high school. Cut to college. I'm 19 years old. I'm going to school in Boone, North Carolina, and I meet this girl named Vicky, and she's really cool. She's a hippie chick, and she says, I live in a water tower. You gotta come check this out. I was like, hell yeah, I gotta go check this out. So I took the bus to her place. I get there, you gotta crawl up the stairs, and you gotta go in low, and there's low pillows, and everything's low, because it's this squat water tower, and she lives there, that's her house. She ran away from home when she was young. And she says, let's go to the Rainbow Gathering. I said, I always wanted to go to the Rainbow Gathering. I'm a hippie from New York City. I know what that is. Do you guys know what that is?
Yeah. Yep. No.
It's a hippie gathering of people. It's like love, peace, harmony in the woods for a few weeks. Hippies hang out, and hopefully they see rainbows, I guess. So we start hitchhiking. She's from her house in North Carolina, and the Rainbow Gathering is in Michigan. So we start hitchhiking, we get picked up by a truck driver. The truck driver's really nice. He lets us sleep in the back. He sleeps in the front. It was really cool. We get through North Carolina. We get picked up by another trucker. We go swimming with that trucker. He maybe likes that a little too much. So we say goodbye to him. And we keep going, and we get picked up by this really nice family, this total hippie family. Mom's got the long braid, she's wearing like the handkerchief top, and they've got like three scruffy kids in the back, teenagers, they're smoking weed. And it's pouring rain, and we're trying to get to Michigan, we want to get to the Rainbow Gathering. And they said, you know, it finally stops raining, we pull over in this clearing, and there is this giant rainbow. So we see see this rainbow, and we're looking at our watches, and we're thinking, you know, are we really going to get to Michigan? We're in Virginia now. And she's like, well, oh, I forgot the part. She actually dragged me to an airport at one point and was convinced that some of these pilots were going to give us a ride. That did not happen, okay? We had to get out of the airport. So, I'm 19 years old, you know? What have we done? So, I had heard about this event happening on the Mall in Washington, D.C. called Rock Against Reagan. I don't know if any of you have heard of that in the 80s, but the Dead Kennedys were playing, and I said, well, you know, why don't we just go to that? It's like July 3rd, we could make it there. It's not exactly the Rainbow Gathering, but, you know, it's a little easier to get there. So I convinced her to take a detour. We saw a rainbow after all. And we go to D.C., and D.C. is great. The place is packed with people. You know, I was a kid who was always going to a march on Washington. I was at every feminist march. I was at all kinds of marches. Too many to go into because it's late. So what happens when we get there is that we find the Yippies. And they ask me, you know, hey, can you help us out? We've got all this stuff to do. We want to, you know, help the crowd to have fun. And I said, sure, what do you want me to do? And they handed me this little basket. And what was in it but a giant pile of rainbow joints. So I got to hand out rainbow joints to the crowd at the Rock Against Reagan tour in 1983. It was really fun. So for me, how this ties into homecoming, right? That's the question, which I didn't really talk about. For me, anywhere but home was home to me. I did not want to go home. It was summer. I was in college. You know, for me, being in a crowd of like-minded people who appreciated my free rainbow joints, for instance, that felt like home to me. Listening to the Dead Kennedys, Sweet Honey and the Rock were playing. All those kinds of things were going on. So thank you and good night, everybody.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Interesting, boring, really, 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 really boring.
It would be about wonderful things. It would be about
chocolate pigs.
So she's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs?
Pigs are awesome.
All the way down.
I turned it down.
The only dogs can hear.
Burn his...
I turned it down. Do it.
Did you hear that?
No.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
I just went with it. I mean, if you're going to make up a lie, are you thinking at all? I just think it was a stupid decision in my part. Very stupid decision that I regret every day.
New York Representative George Santos laments the countless lies he told voters about his personal history during his congressional campaign, but his alleged financial crimes may haunt him the most. The freshman Republican was indicted Wednesday on 13 federal charges, including wire fraud, money laundering, theft of public funds, and lying to Congress. Santos says he is not guilty, does not plan to resign, and will seek re-election. He calls the indictment a witch hunt. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says a Republican senator's delay in approving nearly 200 military promotions over his objection to the military's abortion policy puts America at risk.
There are a number of things happening globally that indicate that we could be in a contest on any one given day.
Senator Tommy Tuberville of Alabama is delaying the promotions in protest of a policy approved by Austin, granting 3 weeks of paid time off and travel reimbursement for service members in need of out-of-state abortion care. Bipartisan legislation has been introduced aimed at strengthening election infrastructure. Senator Mark Warner of Virginia says voting systems would be required to undergo simulated cyber attacks as part of their standard certification process.
Maintaining the integrity of our voting systems and, more importantly, the public's faith that their votes will be counted in a fair and accurate way is extraordinarily critical.
Specifically, voting systems would undergo so-called penetration testing, a practice allowing researchers to use the same techniques as cyber criminals. Voting rights advocates say outdated voting machines also lead to long lines and lost votes on Election Day. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee says the state legislature will hold a special legislative session this August focused on gun reform following last month's deadly school shooting in Nashville.
We have to stay focused on the path forward. Tennesseans are depending on us.
Lee says he will meet with lawmakers and local residents to discuss solutions to gun violence while preserving citizens' constitutional rights. Vermont's Republican governor has signed abortion and gender-affirming shield bills into law. The laws are the first in the country to explicitly include protecting access to abortion medication. The bills also protect providers for providing legally protected reproductive and gender-affirming care. And Senator Dianne Feinstein of California has returned to Capitol Hill after a month-long health absence. Her return once again gives Democrats their majority on the Senate Judiciary Committee and its one-seat advantage in the full chamber. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In March, Idaho passed a bill discontinuing college-issued IDs as a form of identification to vote. In a leaked video, a GOP legal strategist recently told donors that it should be a GOP priority to stop voting on college campuses and end same-day registration. Are you a college student and want to vote in 2024? Start preparing now. Research from Tufts University's Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, or CIRCLE, shows turnout of voters aged 18 to 29 has increased substantially since 2014's 13% to 2022's estimated 23%. The vast majority of young voters don't favor conservative candidates, so some states have rolled back laws on the books for years, ending the use of college IDs for voting, restricting residency requirements, and eliminating Election Day registration. To overcome those barriers in Wisconsin, campus organizers did registration and turnout organizing and are credited with an 11% margin for the liberal candidate in the state's recent Supreme Court election. According to Voting Rights Lab, North Dakota, Ohio, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and recently Idaho don't allow student IDs. Other anti-voter state legislatures are trying to ban them. Read more and learn your state's requirements for student voting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. More tomorrow on the American Democracy Minute. I'm Brian Beal.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at Mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined today by Eric Wallaber, who is a town board member in a town of Persicale, where I happen to live. Over the last 18 months or so, we've been trying to keep update on the discovery of forever chemicals, PFOA, PFOA, in the drinking water. Some local residents started with the Algonquin Middle School. I guess almost more than two dozen have found some level. EPA recently come out and said there is no safe level of PFOA in drinking water. The state standard has been 10 parts. So quite a few of them are over that 10 parts, and 14 are between 5 and 10. The Department of Environmental Conservation on the 18th is going to have another informational day for people at Algonquin School in the evening, and the town of Persicale itself, it's monthly meeting this week on May 11th. We'll be talking about the possibility of creating a second part of the public water supply system for the town, for local residents concerned. So Eric, can you bring us up to date? DEC seems not to think this is a serious problem, or they've not been able to identify any industrial or commercial source. It's more home residents that's causing the problems.
Yeah, Mark, just last week, within the last 10 days for sure,
DEC put out a report, which was months late, nearly a year late. And, you know, to summarize, the answer is, yes, there's some PFOAs out here. We can't detect any one location. And if we had to detect one location, it's the school, which is, you know, is absurd. It's not the school. It never was the school. Unfortunately, this is, you know, what I would expect. You know, this started upwards of 2 years ago. DEC really never wanted to find the source, never seriously attempted to find the source. And so now, months late, they finally produce a report that basically says we can't find the source. But if it's anything, it's probably the school, which, you know, I don't believe for 1 second the school has anything to do with it, although it puts the school in a difficult situation. And so now, next week, they're going to come out here and try to put a bow on this and have what they call an informational session, but is more of just handing out a few flyers and checking a box. And unfortunately, we're no further along the road than we were 2 years ago.
Now, I know that one of the gentlemen who had really uncovered this problem over in the town, a village of Hoosick Falls, he looked at the maps, and within about, I guess, 15 minutes, he identified a likely source as a little industrial company in town, DSI, which apparently has had PFOA contaminant issues in the past. But when I looked at the town website to see what commercial sites they looked at, it did not seem that DSI was one of the ones that DEC included in the report for some reason. Do you know what that's about?
You know, no, I don't, Mark. You know, they asked us for suggestions. Of course, you know, Judith Enk and myself, of course, your wife and I suggested that they look into DSI. They ended up doing some wells primarily at the school, very close to the school. And one of the things that's most alarming by their own report is that right across the street from the school, they did a surface level sample, and they detected a high level just at the surface of PFOA. And then they never dropped a monitoring well. So the one area that in the, you know, within a stone's throw of the school, that's also upstream from the school, that had high surface level PFOA levels, they chose not to drop a well there, but they dropped wells at the school. They dropped wells further away. And it just kind of, you know, begs the question, why would you not drop wells at the one place that had the highest surface water detection? And I don't think we're going to get that answer from DEC, because they really have never answered any serious questions that we've had in the past 2 years.
Now, I'll just say, you know, I used to be on the town board, and actually I was involved in, you know, closing the old town landfill, which I don't know if that was on their testing site. But I also remember that when we were looking at the town landfill, one thing we were concerned about was adjoining the town landfill was an old racetrack that not only apparently dropped waste oil on the racetrack all the time in order to keep the dust down, but rumor had it they also were involved in burying a lot of construction and demolition debris for major projects, because that was a business owner. It just doesn't seem like DEC was all that committed to actually trying to find a commercial or industrial waste source for this contamination.
No, and you're absolutely right. And by the way, where there is an existing waste transfer station, they allowed that company to provide their own testing and didn't do independent testing. So no, I mean, from day one, it's been my opinion, I've been very critical of DEC. They never wanted to find the source. They never were serious about finding the source. And now they've produced a report, and we shouldn't be shocked to find out that they haven't found a source. And they kind of said, well, it seems that if anything, the school is the one that has the highest levels. And, you know, it's their septic system. And maybe it has something to do with, you know, artificial sweeteners. And I mean, it's just almost absurd, the report that they have finalized. And, you know, I think if anything, they're pointing the finger at the middle school, which I think is, you know, like I said before, I'd be concerned if I worked for the school district. I don't think it's fair. It's certainly if Algonquin Middle School has anything to do with PFOAs, then every single middle school and high school that's on a well in upstate New York and all of New York must be creating their own PFOAs, which of course is not the case.
Now, the town a number of years ago, I guess more than a decade at this point, did have to create a public water system, partly with some of the houses by the old landfill where there was contamination, but also in the Hamlin area, the houses were so close together, problem with, you know, sort of septic systems. Now they're discussing the possibility of doing a second public water district, I guess, in the area around the school. How is that issue, you know, sort of proceeding? And we were lucky in terms of town residents that Obama's economic development bailout came in at times. A lot of the money for that system came from the federal government. What's the discussion going on with an expanded town water system?
Well, an expanded town water district is going to cost $5.5 million. Now, to the credit of the town and the supervisor, we have gotten a grant for, long and short of it, we've gotten a grant for about four. The county has decided to kick in about $600,000. We're still working at the federal level to try to secure some money. Funny that you say that, Mark, because you're right. The first district came through and it was helped by President Obama's stimulus package. Of course, last year we were given, every town, municipality was given COVID relief money. The town of Postville was given $450,000. We are still sitting on $280,000. I've asked the town board to join me in setting aside $100,000 because at this point, to the credit of the state, I will give the state credit where it's due. They have given us a grant. I'll give the county credit. They've given us $600,000. And I think the town should put in some money as well. And then we can continue to make the point to the federal government that, hey, look, at we're all feeling a little bit of pain here. But as it is right now, the folks in the proposed water district are looking at, you know, a significant amount of money for the bond and for obviously the operation and maintenance of a new water district.
And are residents supportive of this, or are they like, heck no, I can't afford it?
I think there's a lot of folks who have sticker shock, first of all. And I think there's a lot of folks who also understand that it is a benefit. We can't deny that, right? I mean, putting a water district, I happen to live in the proposed water district, just so to be clear. So sure, having a water district there, it's a benefit. And, you know, I think there has to be some payment to that, too. But, you know, no one in this water district created those PFOAs. I don't think the school created those PFOAs. And at the end of the day, we're going to ask the town residents to pay for contamination. And that's the problem. And it's at the end of the day, it's not an insignificant amount of money. And so there are people in the district who are not happy.
Eric Wallaber, town board member of Postenkill, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk magazine.
Because of media and how it portrays mental health, it goes immediately to what appears to be ugly. But mental health, if you reword that, it's my emotional well-being. What is my emotional well-being? And each person, I believe, has a baseline or continuum, as you say, of emotional well-being. It may not look like mine, it may not look like yours, it may not look like a CEO of a company, but each person has one. And for them to be able to have the support to find what that is, that's what makes me happy.
Welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's our opportunity to shed light on mental health, mental illness, and other behavioral health issues, and that these issues can affect all of us. This is Marcia Lazarus sitting with Rensselaer resident Diana Babcock. It's so nice to see you, Diana. And I believe you and I met about 6 or 7 years ago. I was working at Mahaney's Mental Health Association in New York State, and I had invited you to participate in a panel discussion for folks looking to get back into the workforce, how to make it a positive experience. So, Diana, I'd like to start with your business. Which you started when?
Probably around 2015, I would say, when I started working for what was at the time called Peer Support Solutions and Support Group Central as a New York State certified peer facilitator.
Tell us what you do.
I am what is called an online group facilitator, mental health group facilitator, but it encompasses more than mental health. It encompasses addiction, recovery, parenting. Everything that I do is based on my own lived experience. I work on the platform called Hey Peers. So if somebody goes to Hey Peers and clicks find a facilitator, they can put my name in there and they're going to see my profile. And then they can choose to connect with me. In that profile, I have what I call hashtags. They're life experiences, and I call them my hashtags. So there's addiction, mental health, parenting, and each one of them is my lived experience. Trauma, complex trauma, health, chronic health stuff, everything's in there. I spend time with people who are in group settings and also in one-to-ones, just supporting them and helping them figure things out and find direction. It's mental health, but it's more than mental health. As an example, I'll use postpartum depression, new mama, new parents, new father, and they're looking for support after the baby's born. They're overwhelmed, a lot of stuff going on. They can just simply reach out to me for support because I've been there. I had three children and they're all adults now, but I've been there with postpartum depression. I know how difficult it can be to have a new baby. So while there's a mental health diagnosis to that postpartum depression, there's also those of us who have lived experience that can be supportive to someone who's experiencing that. Having a new baby it can be very overwhelming.
What I'm hearing very loudly, Diane, is how valuable having the ability to empathize with somebody, how having had that lived experience is very helpful.
Yes, this is how I refer to is find people who do not feel the need to hand you a Kleenex every time the snotty, messy tears come. Because if someone is handing me a Kleenex, it means that whatever it is that I'm experiencing is causing them distress. So they want me to stop crying. They want me to wipe my nose and pull it together. And sometimes it's really, really hard to pull it together. And we need that space to fall apart. So when people reach out to me for support, no matter what it is, addiction, postpartum, mental health, no matter what it is, one of the first things I look at is what does their support world look like? Because it goes beyond just meeting me and talking. I'm seeing it as it takes a lot of guts to ask for help. It takes a lot of guts to share that, you know, that I'm struggling. I know this did for me at the beginning when everything was happening. So when people reach out to me, I take that into factor. It takes a lot of guts to search, sign up, and actually meet with someone and say, I'm struggling.
Diana, would you say that wellness and mental health and mental illness even are on a continuum, and that all of us sit on this continuum and may move back and forth on it throughout our lives?
I can only come from my perspective of what my experiences were like. I would say it is a continuum. The ups, the downs, life circumstances, loss, but also gain, everything can be challenging. That continuum has layers. I believe that it has layers of society, trauma, environmental issues. That continuum has many, many layers. We can be going along fine, most of us can be going along fine. And then there'll be some kind of something that will become overwhelming. And again, I can only speak for myself, where I'm not able to hold it together. And for me, that my first hospitalization was like that. I was no longer able to what my friends, you know, a couple of my friends call be the rock. I was no longer able to do that. And in my words, the rock cracked. I fell apart. I emotionally fell apart. So there's that dip, what some would call the dip of the line, the continuum, the emotional line. There's that dip, except for me, it was a catastrophic dip where I lost everything. I lost my kids to the system. I lost my home. I lost everything. Rising back up to that line took a while, and a lot of system support to get back up to that line. A lot of tools that I learned through the process of what I went through. So getting back to that line, it just took a lot of work and a lot of energy to get back there. And now for me is I do all sorts of things to help me, what I call breathe easier, stay steady on, so that I don't go back to that dark place where I was.
So those things, Diana, that you do to breathe easy, continue to stay steady, are these the tools that you draw from as a WRAP, a wellness recovery action plan facilitator?
So WRAP for me is a really good tool. Wellness, what they call a wellness toolbox, and y'all can't see it, but as I'm sitting here in my living room, I've got my paintings on the wall, I've got my plants, got a banana tree from Puerto Rico in my window, you know, that's taller than me. So those are the visible things. I'm a Reiki master 3, and I use Reiki on myself and with permission for others, and I do that. And these are all what would be in the WRAP world called wellness tools.
What you do really normalizes mental health and mental health challenges, rather than making it dramatic.
Yes, because when it's made dramatic, when it's things are coming from the outfield, left field, right field, when that happens, people are afraid to let somebody know they're struggling. They're just afraid. So they're not going to. They're not going to. And I know this because of my own experiences of how I was raised, you know, farm, stock, military. So you didn't talk, you didn't pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you move on. So it causes people to not want to reach out, causes them to stay silent. But yeah, it's called Hey Peers, and it's peer run. And it's the facilitators have lived experience in it. Many, many, we've got veterans and teachers and everybody certified as a peer specialist, and they use their lived experience to support others.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Liz Montgomery reports in Porcupine Soup that after 14 years as town supervisor, Paul Mako is not running for re-election this year. Instead, he is running for a town board seat, and Greenville councilperson John Benson is running for supervisor. Benson and Mako were endorsed by the Greenville Republicans on May 9. Republicans also nominated incumbents, clerk and tax collector Jessica Lewis, and Highway Superintendent Michael Dudley and Will Von Atzengen for the council. Mako said, and I quote, "I decided I need to scale back a little bit.
I want to stay on and help John, and hopefully when they have the organizational meeting in January, I will be the deputy supervisor if they want me to be, end quote. Greenville Democrats have not nominated candidates yet. Voting runs from October 28th to November 7th this year. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Nancy Kern reports in the Columbia Green Media that five candidates are competing for three seats on the Cairo-Durham School Board in the May 16th election. Anderson Kef, Nicole Plank, and incumbent Stephen Brandow. Gavin Palmieri and Claudette Zucker are all running. Kef graduated from the district 2 years ago, who said she spoke at a board meeting as a sophomore while the elected officials looked at their phones. Plank has a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology from the University at Albany. Zucker is a local realtor. Gavin Palmieri owns Gavin's Irish Country Inn in Durham. Brandow has volunteered for Cairo Little League. They are all running for three-year terms on the board. Voting takes place from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. May 16th on the high school middle school's campus. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Jamal Cutler reports in Columbia Green Media that the Taconic Hills Board of Education is proposing a budget of $38,392,035, a 3.26% decrease from last year's budget. It comes with a 2.29% tax levy decrease. The story does not say what is being cut to lower the budget total. Voters are also being asked to decide whether the school purchases two school vehicles for student transportation, one pickup truck with a plow and sander, and one diesel bus at a maximum cost of $251,000. Another proposition before voters is whether to buy 10 zero-emission buses for student transportation at a cost of $4,079,051. New York State is mandating that all new school buses purchased must be zero emission by 2027. Another proposition asks voters if they want to spend $700,000 for electric bus charging, including a new electrical transformer, electrical switchgear, panel boards, charging pedestals, transfer switch, wiring underground trenching concrete, and asphalt pavement. Voters cast ballots from noon to 9 p.m. May 16th at the Taconic Hills Central School District Veterans Community Room. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, town board meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grand. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Thursday, sunny with a high near 77 degrees. On Thursday night, it will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 52 degrees. And on Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 81 degrees. And Friday night, a slight chance of showers after 3 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 56 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.
Here is new music released in 2022 from the Anti-Dawn EP. This is Burial, and the track is called Strange Neighborhood.
I didn't know that. came around my way. Thank you.